This week on the podcast, we talk through a case study with Teach for America about how they operationalized a digital strategy. This is Using the Whole Whale, a podcast that brings you stories of data and technology in the nonprofit world. My name is George Weiner, your host and the chief whaler of WholeWhale.com. Thanks for joining us. This week, we talk to Peter Petralia, a partner at Modern Craft, a consulting agency that has a case study we were really excited about at Teach for America. They were taking a digital strategy they had put together and effectively operationalizing it, which, you know, may sound like a lot of fluff until you get into the weeds. How do you move that inertia? How do you get that first step going? What I want you to listen to inside of this case study are the elements of people, process, and product that are involved in operationalizing effectively, you know, a document, a strategy that you have. This is especially effective, I think, for executives out there and heads of departments wondering how they're going to make that shift. What do you start with? The chicken and egg of the people or the products so that you can become a more effective digital organization. Lots to learn here. I'm excited to share this interview with you. I'm here with Peter Petralia, partner at Modern Craft. Peter, thanks for joining us. I'm really excited to hear this case study you had to share. But before we jump into it, tell us a little bit about your work and Modern Craft.
Sure. Hi. Modern Craft is a Vancouver-based consultancy, and I joined about a year and a half ago. And our work is essentially that we focus on helping organizations to look after their marketing strategy. And that sometimes leads us into work that is external facing, like helping to figure out a campaign structure or a brand narrative or even some executional things like websites. And sometimes it takes the shape of looking internally to help figure out what the processes and structures are that are going to enable a marketing team to be able to be strategic. So I tend to focus on a lot of the internal stuff, helping create new org structures and new processes, and helping clients figure out how to work with external partners. And the rest of many of the other folks on my team are focused on some of the more external facing stuff. We're about 14 people, and we've been around for about 4.5 years.
Awesome. And I'm excited to talk to you because something tells me when it's time to go digital, it's not just like flipping a switch, is it?
No, not at all.
Let me, before we jump into this case study, how did you come into this work and what is your experience and sort of journey toward your approach and thinking around digital?
Yeah, I have a funny background. I have I've had two pathways that have been parallel to each other and kind of recently converged. I have a theater background. I have a PhD and a master's in theater. I was a playwright and a writer, and my theater company toured to I think about 5 continents for about 15 years. And so I've always been really interested in storytelling and in the way that you can corral a group of people to do a thing at a given point of time. So in theater, you never miss a deadline because when the curtain goes up, the audience has paid their admission and they're waiting to see a show. And so there's a real skill that you develop in theater of being able to compromise, to solve problems, and to think on your feet. The other part of my background has come up through video games, actually. I used to work in a small game studio helping brands in the kind of end of the 90s, beginning of the 2000s, figure out how to take their brands and make them make sense in video games. So I did things like developed the first Game Boy Color for Barbie, did video games for Christina Aguilera, Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen, and some others like Cheerios and Stuart Little too. And at some point, these two things kind of collided a little bit when I started working more directly in digital and working at shops like Razorfish and Huge and some of the bigger agencies who were trying to really kind of push forward the kind of digital first mantra. Where I have come to is a feeling that there is no single way, and that the idea that digital is the future is almost a little bit passé. Digital at this point is kind of the present and a little bit the past. It's sort of the air that we breathe and the world that we live in. And so instead, I am now working to help marketers really think of in a very integrated way about how they tell the stories, how they get people to rally around a cause or an idea, and how they use all the tools available in their toolkit instead of focusing narrowly in on only one thing. And also how they prioritize, how they make decisions about which things are going to be most impactful based on the research or their understanding about their audiences or what their audiences need.
I like that, the air we breathe. It's not the future, it is the now. However, what ends up happening to an industry like the nonprofit sector, which as a general rule, and I have the data to back this up, lags the for-profit industry for a number of reasons. This is where your work, I think, is especially interesting, and maybe we move into the case study with Teach for America, by all accounts, venerable, savvy, amazing organization. Can you talk us through the landscape here? How did they come to your doorstep, and what was the initial problem they were trying to solve?
Yeah, so I started working with Teach for America a little over 2.5 years ago when I was working at a different agency in New York. I was working at a brand agency leading their digital practice, and they came to us initially looking for some help with their brand. And when we took a look at what they were asking and the kind of problems they were trying to solve, we actually went back to them and in our pitch said, we can do the brand work, but actually what you really need is to understand your customers. And so we proposed that we do a participant journey map that helped them understand how people become aware of who Teach for America is, and then how they go through the experience of joining the core, becoming an alumni, and hopefully, you know, donating and being part of their larger mission. And then we also proposed to them that they needed a digital strategy. And so they took us up on that offer, and we ended up doing those two projects around near the kind of middle point of our work together. I decided to join Modern Craft as a partner. And when I did, Teach for America asked to be able to continue to work with me. And so they kind of came with me to Modern Craft in a bit of an unusual arrangement, because often, you know, that's not really allowed. It's sort of verboten. But because the things that they were looking for were not things that my old agency could do, they were able to come with me to Modern Craft. So what started as a we have a problem with the brand quickly became, let's first understand who you're talking to and what they're experiencing and what they're kind of how they are experiencing you as a brand and as a program. That then helped us understand, what do we want to do digitally? How do we want to communicate with folks? With an organization like Teach for America, who has, you know, have programs in 50 regions across the country, have, you know, 2,800 employees, several thousand core members at any given time. It's a very distributed system. And so digital is a very efficient way to reach that many people. And what we saw was that they weren't really leveraging the vast amounts of data that they had and the real subject matter expertise they had in education reform. It was sort of being weakened as it was distributed through their system. So a really great idea or a really great story that was happening in one part of their system, one region potentially, wasn't really making its way to the other parts of the system. So therefore, their impact was not expanding in the way it needed to. So we then started doing work together on uncovering what it was about that system that was causing that friction. And a quick thing that we discovered was that they didn't really have any kind of a content strategy. And what I mean by a content strategy is they weren't really thinking about what the coherent way they wanted to talk about the various parts of their mission to various audiences was. So they hadn't really thought about, you know, what does a 19-year-old who is, or 20-year-old who is thinking about taking this enormous journey to move to a part of the country they've never lived in and help kids who are really struggling to achieve a better education. What do they really want to know or care about the state of education reform in America? Or what do they know or care about Teach for America? What do they think about the idea of leadership versus teaching? They weren't really thinking about it in their eyes. Teach for America was thinking about it more from an organizational standpoint, about what do we believe our mission is and what do we think is right for the world. And all of that stuff is really important to be clear about who you are, but not so not more important than what their audiences care about. So as we were thinking about how to solve that, we helped them come to the realization that they really needed a content strategy, something that would help them understand how to talk to all of those audiences. And then also the structural part of a content strategy was just to help them think about how to make that strategy come to life in a meaningful way through all of the different channels that they have available to them. So that then led us to helping them think about some staffing issues, because they didn't really have the right folks on staff to be able to build that content strategy. They didn't have a data team within the digital team to make decisions about some of their paid advertising strategies, or to even understand the kind of traffic that they were getting. So we slowly over time helped them think about team structure, which then eventually led us to helping them think about not just the digital team, but the entire marketing team. And over the course of that journey, which, you know, has been 2.5 years so far, one of the really interesting things that happened is that initial participant journey work that was done by Sullivan when I was at Sullivan became a kind of rallying point for the whole organization, and it created something that everyone could get behind in terms of a focus. Instead of having battles about what one region wants to do versus another region, everybody could focus on the participant and say, well, what do our participants want? And this becomes a way of diffusing closely held beliefs, and instead really looking at what the data is telling you, qualitative and quantitative data.
It's interesting. The way we like to look from our perspective at, that sort of shift in an organization, especially around digital, is dividing into the people, process, and product. And I think I heard just the notes of each of those verticals, and I'm so happy to hear that attention to staff. And I want to drill into that a bit, because all too often in the digital landscape, here's the magic tool that will help you do the more with the digital. Just turn this on and pay this monthly fee and you're all set. And once you get into it, if you're looking at an organization that has, for example, as you mentioned, nobody paying attention to the data or digital data, or nobody on, the ECRM communication team, you're like, you're going to fail. You're wasting money on the product. Can you tell me a little bit about that sensitive shift? Because it can feel like you're turning an iceberg. Staffing is decided so far out. How do you go about that?
I think what's important to note is that in all marketing, it's really a people business. Whether those people are your customers or your audience or your supporters or donors, whatever you call them, there's the kind of external people who surround you as an organization. And then there are the people that power you, and those might be volunteers, they might be staff, they might be agency partners or consulting partners. And I think very often we tend to think that the problem is in the work that we're doing, or in the output, or in the way it's being received, or something external to us. And sometimes that is true. Very often it's true. But as soon as you peel back the layers on those assumptions, you often find that the root of the problem is that you don't have the right people to do the job. It's a classic casting problem, to use a theater term. You don't cast a 10-foot man to play a an older woman in a show, unless you're trying to say something about the dissonance between what you see and what the person is supposed to be. You try to cast somebody who's likely to convince you that they are right for the role. And we often don't do that because we think, well, we've just got this staff of people and we have these jobs to be done, and we're just going to ask the people we have to do the jobs. And what's really awful about that is it's demotivating if you're a person who's been asked to do something that you're not really capable of doing. And it's frustrating if you're a manager and you're not getting the kind of quality of work that you want. So what we did with Teach for America and what we do with all of our clients is that we really start by asking a lot of questions to understand two main things. What are the jobs to be done? So what are the things that you think marketing is supposed to be doing? And not just at a high level, but at a very detailed level. And we will sometimes make these crazy lists of every single job, like somebody needs to check the Google Analytics daily and be, or hourly, and be thinking about its meaning. Somebody needs to brief the writers. Somebody needs to write the copy. Every job. We look at all of those jobs and we think about, what of these jobs do we feel like we really need to be doing? And are there any of these jobs that somebody else could be doing? And thirdly, are there any jobs that we don't see here that really belong here? So we kind of do a bit of an inventory to just really understand the work that should be happening. And then we do another inventory to really understand the skills, to understand who you have on your team, what they're really good at, and really actually importantly, like what they're passionate about. In Teach for America's case, we didn't do that in a super formal way because there was a lot of sensitivity about it feeling as if we were thinking we had the solution in mind before we started. And we wanted to be very clear that we didn't. So we just had a lot of conversations with the team. We observed folks to understand what they were doing. We looked at their work output. And then we put some theories out and we said, our theory is you maybe don't have the right folks to be thinking about this problem or that problem. And then we tested those theories, often with the people who were most closely adjacent to that role, and often heard back, actually, we do have this, or you're right, we don't. And through a process of sort of discovery, we came to some further theories that said, okay, what would the world be like at Teach for America if your organization looked like this or this or this? And we ended up with 10 different org structures just for the digital team when we started. And there was one that we were very excited by, and that the head of marketing was very excited by, which oriented people in these cross-functional agile teams. But it was way too scary a move from where they were currently, which was in functional lines of a digital team, a creative team, a events team, a PR and comms team. It felt too scary to break that down entirely and make it cross-functional. So instead, we focused on fixing more short-term things that we thought would have a big impact. So we came up with a priority list of new skills that we needed, content strategy being at the top, and we just started we started hiring for those roles. And then as those new people came on, it changed the character and the culture of the team, and it enabled folks to understand how they might be able to operate differently when they had new skill sets on board. We also made a decision at some point that they should get some external help, because as you said, it can take a lot of time to hire, to find the right talent, to get through the internal processes, to get approval on jobs, on job descriptions, a new headcount. That can take some time, but we didn't want to lose momentum in terms of actually getting some work done. So we suggested that they use some external partners to do some of the work that those new folks would do to get the momentum going, so that when new team members were in place, they could hit the ground running, having some work already in process. But I would say it takes time. It takes patience. It requires that you constantly question whether you're making the right choices. So we had some theories, we had some structures that we thought made sense, we had some roles that we thought made sense. As we got through hiring and finding the right people, we would sometimes determine that actually we could go a slightly different direction. So we didn't hold on to our beliefs so tightly that it stopped us from adapting as the team started to take shape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so many different threads here, and I want to put you in a hypothetical though. This is a bit of a game of chicken and egg where, you know, there are executives listening right now saying, I know I need to make a move toward digital. I don't know whether or not I should have a strategy and maybe some of the products in place before I hire, let's say, a CMO, a high level, to design this, or should I just get to the work I know needs to be done, hire somebody junior who can just start hammering out the content I know needs to be created, the work that needs to be done, because a CMO process, as you know, is like a 6-month minimum, and it's a big investment and big risk. Chicken and egg kind of question for you. What is your approach and thinking? And you can't say it depends.
Well, it does depend.
I know.
Well, I think the question I would ask myself is, what is the risk to my organization or risk to my brand if I do nothing? Because sometimes doing nothing is better than putting out a half-formed or ill-shaped strategy that can't be executed very well by a team. Waiting 6 months to hire the right person can be the right decision if you determine that the risk to your organization of doing nothing for 6 months is pretty minimal. If you're in a situation where spotlight is on you, the pressure is really high to either raise money or, you know, to do something else specifically related to your mission, then starting with a scrappy team and iterating makes a lot of sense. And what I mean by that is really like gathering a brain trust of smart folks. They could be from all across the organization, could be a junior person who you bring in who's more of an executor, and really getting clear on how does our organizational mission or our goals or objectives for them from an organization level, what can our marketing or digital team be doing to enable those things? And what is the first thing that's going to have the most impact that we can do right now, and kind of starting small. So if the pressure is really on you, I'd say just start, just do something small. If there's too much risk to your brand, to doing that, if you have stumbled in the past, or if folks already have a suspicious view of you, then maybe waiting for 6 months until you can hire the right person is a better path.
I know it's a hard question. I think you did a good job sort of covering those different most likely scenarios of what you're doing. My next question for you is around the philosophy of that test and iterate, right? The agile marketing that Silicon Valley just does, like get out there, break things, and, you know, accidentally let Russians control an election. There's a competing interest out there. And so as an executive, you're leading your organization, you know you should be out there breaking things, moving fast. How do I balance just testing and executing and then measuring versus taking that step back, designing a full strategy that may take more time? How do you look at those two elements?
I tend to think that you do both. I think it's really helpful to have a strategy to start with, but often a strategy is really, honestly, it's a theory until you test it. And so I tend to believe that you shouldn't be too tense or strict about how closely you hold on to your strategies until you see them performing in the world, until you can validate them. So if it was me, what I would do is I would have a strategic theory at the very minimum, some idea that you believe to be true because of one or two proof points. And then I would think about your testing approach being about trying to validate those proof points. So our theory is that peer-to-peer donation has a ton of potential for our organization. And if we could enable people to get their friends to donate online by adding some percentage to the gift that I'm already giving, we think that that's going to have a big impact. So we're going to have a marketing strategy that tries to drive those kind of donations. Try that in a small, controlled way. Does it work? How do you know if it's working? Did you do it long enough? Try it again. Try it a few times. As soon as you start to see conclusive evidence that it's either not working or it is having an impact, then you know that that's probably a strategy either to keep or kill.
That's an excellent answer. You know, you can't iterate and measure against something if you don't have a target. And strategy documents and all these things are best simplified into that. We have a thesis, a best guess based on available information and advice, and we're going to try in this area, because otherwise you're spreading peanut butter across far too many slices of bread, unclear what and why you're doing things.
Time to feed the whales with a quick word from our sponsor, Whole Whale. Lighthouse by Whole Whale is a brand new Google Analytics add-on that lets you see what each of your email subscribers are doing on your website. Lighthouse links your email CRM with Google Analytics to connect the dots in your data. Give your supporters what they need by getting to know exactly what they're looking for. This easy and affordable tool shines light on what content, what pages, what paths, and what clicks they may have explored in the past 2 years. Learn more at getlighthouse.io. That's getlighthouse.io. And now back to our show.
All right, Peter, I think it's time to move into our rapid fire round, unless there's anything else that you want to add as a capstone on the TFA case study.
The only thing I might say to people is I think it's important not to be paralyzed by the volume of things you don't know or potential things you could do or things other people are doing. I think it's really important to value simplicity and value prioritization and be okay with incremental success. One of the hard things for Teach for America is that they don't really fundamentally believe in incremental change. They believe in big systems change. It's what their mission is about. And in digital and in the world in which we live today, things actually tend to move more rapidly through increments, but it can be a hard mind shift to make, to be okay with saying, I'm going to do this one thing pretty well and allow these other things to be kind of imperfect, and I'm going to allow these other things to be really bad because that's all I can really do, and I'm going to be happy with doing that thing because it's going to move me forward. The worst thing you can do is be paralyzed and do nothing.
I think that's a perfect way to motivate people in that first step. Now we move into the rapid fire round, Peter. Are you ready for your short replies to our odd questions?
Yes.
What is something that has you really excited about in the coming year?
I think the thing I'm most excited about in the coming year is seeing the work that we've been doing with Teach for America actually come to life through the restructure and reorganization of their teams into cross-functional agile pods.
What is a cool tool you've started using in the last year that doesn't cost too much?
Evernote is my favorite tool, and it's cheap.
What are some of the most pressing tech dragons you need to slay in the coming year?
CRM is an eternal tech dragon, if I can use that phrase. If you don't have good data about your users, you're not going to be able to reach them.
If you had a hot tub time machine that you could jump in and go back to the start of the TFA relationship, what would you tell that younger, far more talented and handsome Peter?
To be patient.
If you have a magic wand that you could wave across the nonprofit sector, what would it do?
It would get nonprofits to stop thinking about themselves and start thinking about their audiences.
What is a mistake you made earlier in your career that has shaped the way you do things today?
I too often gave my clients the answer as opposed to allowing them to discover it themselves, and I don't do that anymore.
There are tens of thousands of young people leaving college and joining the workforce interested in social impact work. What would be your advice to them?
I would suggest that they spend some time really understanding the power of marketing to help create movements towards social justice.
Do you believe that nonprofits can successfully go out of business?
I think nonprofits can go out of business successfully going out of...
All right, Peter, finally, how do people find you? How do people help you?
People can find us online at www.themoderncraft.com. And if anybody wants to reach out, they can find my contact information online.
Peter, thank you so much for sharing your time, talent, and expertise with us. I think it has been incredibly enlightening.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
The metaphor that came to mind and I shared in the interview is trying to steer an iceberg. It can feel that way. You can feel like there are so many things that need to change. There are so many to-do items and you just don't know where to start. And the larger your organization, inevitably, the less nimble you can be. But it doesn't need to be a physical size. It can, it can almost be emotional sometimes where you maybe have board members or certain players in certain positions and you're just like, oh, it's so hard to do something different. And so think about those different cases that Peter talked through and which avenues may work for you, but ultimately realize the answer's not coming inside of a strategic document. The answer's not coming from the magical product that you buy. The answer's not coming from hiring that one ace that's going to suddenly be able to change the game for you. It's going to come from doing. It's going to come from this combination of people, process, and product. But it's coming. You realize that the internet as the, like, eventually in the future, we have to get there. It's the standard now. Obviously, this is almost a trope that is mentioned a lot. But if you're not experimenting, you're falling behind. You're losing out on opportunities to move your organization forward. So hopefully you're inspired. Hopefully you have some ideas for next steps. Resources, as always, will be found at wholewhale.com/podcast, where you can find these show resources. Thanks for joining us. This has been Using the Whole Whale. For more resources on today's show, please visit wholewhale.com/podcast and consider following us on Twitter at Whole Whale. And thanks for joining us. As always, music from the unflappable, unstoppable, unsuppressible, unbelievable? GregThomasMusic.org. GregThomasMusic.org. Awesome place to get music for whatever project that you're working on. Thanks, Greg. You are awesome sauce.